From Jakarta, here is the Voice of Indonesia with English program. Presenting news, information, and entertainment from Indonesia. You can listen our broadcast and online streaming voanews.id.
Hello listener, how are you today? I hope you are fine and I will accompany you with 60 minutes ahead for today's edition. And we'd like to present some programs started with news, commentary and other sort of information as well as entertainment and Indonesian pop song. Listener, we begin our program with news. So stay with us on Voice of Indonesia from Indonesia to the world at frequencies shortwave 3325 kHz and website www.vianews.id.
At RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia with the news.
Here is the news first, the headlines. Indonesia to promote 2030 agenda post ECOSOC collection. Government to proceed with priority infrastructure projects. Now the news in details. Indonesia's aims to continue promoting the Global Development Agenda of 2030, including the Sustainable Development Goals SDG, after being elected as a member of the United Nations Economic and Social Council ECOSOC for 2021-2023. Permanent Representative of Indonesia to the United Nations, Dian Triansyah Yani, in a statement received on Thursday, as quoted by Antara, said that becoming a member of the ECOSOC serves as a substantial opportunity for Indonesia to contribute to promoting the 2014 agenda and ensuring that no one is left behind in the process. Yani said that during its three terms as ECOSOC's member, Indonesia will focus on promoting inclusive and sustainable development. Indonesia received 186 out of 190 votes during the election of ECOSOC members held by the UN General Assembly at the UN headquarters in New York on Wednesday, June 17, 2020. Indonesia is representing the Asia-Pacific group at the UN body, along with Japan and the Solomon Islands. The government will go ahead with the development of priority infrastructure project despite the state budget reallocation for COVID-19 handling, according to the Coordinating Ministry for Maritime and Investment Affairs. Deputy for Coordination of Infrastructure and Transportation, Ridwan Jamaluddin, noted on Thursday that the government's budget is largely allocated for COVID-19 handling. However, it does not mean that the development of infrastructure must be stopped, as this project is aimed at meeting the public's long-term needs. Jamaluddin, as quoted by Antara, elaborated that infrastructure development was aimed at maintaining productivity that will further facilitate the creation of jobs for the public. Jamaluddin cited as an example the development of an airport in Papua that must be completed despite its less economic benefits, as supporting the distributions of logistic and public mobility are of paramount importance. Indonesia currently has 223 national strategic projects worth around 4.2 quadrillion rupiah on its priority list that have been revised several times since 2016. This news comes to you from Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta. Now let's move on to the international news. Krishna Bobenrit, a chair of the Committee for Trade and Investment CDI, stressed that facilitating trade is a critical response to ascertaining that the COVID-19 pandemic will not result in a long-term economic crisis. Bobenrit noted in a written statement issued by the APEC Secretariat and received on Thursday that along with taking measures to protect the health, they also need to adopt measures to facilitate trade and investment at the international and domestic levels. The CDI is APEC's largest group and is often at the front lines of the forum's works to realize free and open trade and investment. Bobenrit noted that the key component for economic growth, trade and investment were actually impacted by the pandemic. The World Trade Organization WTO Director General highlighted that world trade is estimated to decline between 13% and 32% in 2020 across all sectors of the economy during the pandemic. China has freed 10 Indian soldiers captured in a high-altitude border clash in the Himalayas, which left at least 20 Indian soldiers dead, media reports said on Friday. The release follows several rounds of talks between the two sides in a bid to ease tensions after the battle on Monday, in which scores of troops from the two sides fought with nail-studded batons and hurled rocks at each other. The 10 soldiers were freed late on Thursday, the Press Trust of India News Agency and other media reported. The Indian government made no comment, but the army released a statement saying it is clarified that there are no Indian troops missing in action after the fighting in the Galwan Valley area of Ladakh. India and China have blamed each other for the most serious fighting in more than 50 years along their bitterly contested Himalayas border, where they fought a war in 1962. The two sides have held a series of political and military talks in a bid to bring tensions down, but warn each other in public statements. The World Health Organization said on Thursday that a few hundred million COVID-19 vaccine doses could be produced by the end of the year and be targeted at those most vulnerable to the virus. The UN Health Agency said it was working on that assumption with a few of 2 billion doses by the end of 2021 as pharmaceutical firms rush to find a vaccine. WHO chief scientist Soumya Swaminathan said researchers were working on more than 200 vaccine candidates around the world, including 10 that are in human testing. She identified 3 groups most in need of the first wave of vaccine doses. They are frontline workers with high exposure, such as medics and police officers, those most vulnerable to the disease, such as the elderly and diabetics, and people in high transmission settings, such as urban slums and care homes. Pharmaceuticals company executives said late last month that one or several COVID-19 vaccine could begin rolling out before 2021, but warned that an estimated total of 15 billion doses would be needed to suppress the virus. A sophisticated state-based actor has been attempting to hack a wide range of Australian organizations for months and has stepped up its efforts recently, Prime Minister Scott Morrison said on Friday. The attacks have targeted all levels of the government, political organization, essential service providers, and operators of other critical infrastructure. Morrison also said there were not a lot of state actors that could launch this sort of attack, but Australia will not identify which country was responsible. Australia's Defence Minister Linda Reynolds said advice showed no large-scale personal data breaches from the attack. The revelation comes after Reuters reported Canberra had determined in March last year that China was responsible for a hacking attack on Australia's parliament. Australia never publicly identified that source of the attack, and China denied it was responsible. A person's blood types and other genetic factors may be linked with severity of coronavirus infection, according to European researchers looking for further clues about why COVID-19 hit some so much harder than others. The findings, published in the New England Journal of Medicine on Wednesday, suggest people with type A blood have a higher risk of being infected with the coronavirus and developing worse symptoms. At the peak of the epidemic in Europe, researchers analyzed the gene of more than 4,000 people to look for variation that were common in those who became infected with the coronavirus and developed severe COVID-19. A cluster of variant in genes that are involved with the immune response was more common in people with severe COVID-19. These genes are also involved with the cell surface protein called ACE2 that the coronavirus uses to gain entry to and infect cells in the body. The researchers, led by Dr. André Franke from Christian Albrecht University in Kiel, Germany, and Dr. Tom Carlson from Oslo University Hospital in Norway, also found a relationship between COVID-19 severity and blood type. The risk for severe COVID-19 was 45% higher for people with type A blood than those with other blood types. It appeared to be 35% lower for people with type O. Listener, that was the news. I'm Luka Kusumawati. Thank you for listening.
Voice of Indonesia.
U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo met with China's foreign policy chief Yang Jiechi in Hawaii on Wednesday for rare negotiations held amid increasingly heated conflicts.
The two largest economic strengths in the world are in a matter of various issues, ranging from coronavirus pandemic problems, China's steps to implementing security legislation in Hong Kong, the issue of territories in the South China Sea, to trade war. In the midst of the global pandemic of coronavirus, China and America are mutually accused about the origins of coronavirus. Americans accuse the coronavirus derived from the Wuhan Virology Laboratory, either created or leaked from there. Meanwhile, China accuses coronavirus were created in America and brought to Wuhan by military personnel. China and the United States also face the risk of increasingly conflict in the South China Sea. To avoid this, both parties should be able to manage the crisis like when their warship was in adjacent location. It is difficult to determine exactly when the US and Chinese relations began to deteriorate, but the conflict in the South China Sea was one of the earliest conflicts that occurred. A Chinese military source said that in an April incident, ships from both countries were adjacent to 100 meters. Such incidents show a lack of political confidence between the two militaries. This was quoted by South China Morning Post. According to the China's Foreign Ministry in a statement reported by Reuters, Washington needed to respect Beijing's position in major matters, stop intervention on China's domestic issues such as Hong Kong, Xinjiang, and Taiwan, and start working to improve relations. While the U.S. State Department spokesman Morgan Ortagus in a statement emphasized the need for a reciprocal relationship between the two countries. The U.S. and Chinese relations often experienced ups and downs, but this time, things are increasingly worsening. It's a little hard to guess how or until when this feud will end without the goodwill and intention of the two countries to settle their problems peacefully. The circumstances will not improve. Indeed, as part of the world community, both of them should realize that the conflict between the two world's largest economies must have an impact on other countries. And as there, that was commentary. Welcome back to Today in History. We start from a history on June 19, 1944. Battle in the Philippine Sea between the U.S. Navy and the Japanese Navy began. The Battle of the Philippine Sea was one of the naval battles in the Second World War between the United States Navy and the Japanese Navy. This battle took place on June 19 to 20, 1944, near the Mariana Islands. The 2 days of fighting caused a major defeat to the Japanese Navy, which lost 3 aircraft carriers and around 600 aircrafts. After the battle, the Japanese Navy was almost completely destroyed. This Allied victory opened the opportunity to an attack on Iwo Jima. Next, turn to a history on June 19, 1961, Kuwait declared its independence from Great Britain. In the 800s, Kuwait became part of the Turkish Empire. To realize and answer the wishes of the Turks, the great Shah Mubarak, who ruled in Kuwait, signed a treaty with Britain in 1899, which established the state of Kuwait as an independent state under British protection. Under this agreement, Britain had control over external policy of Kuwait, and as the compensation, Kuwait received annual protection and subsidies from Britain, but Britain violated the agreement. On June 19, 1961, Kuwait became an independent country, and thus British rule over Kuwait ended. We end with a history on June 19, 2008. John Ario Catili passed away. Former Deputy Speaker of the People's Consultative Assembly, Professor John Aryo Katili, passed away on June 19, 2008 in Jakarta. John Aryo Katili served as a member of the House of Representatives from 1992 to 1997. Previously, he served as Director General of Geology and Mineral Resources of the Ministry of Mines and Energy from 1984 to 1989. His expertise in the field of geology was highly respected internationally. For his various services, John Katili was awarded the Mahaputra Star, the Medal of Honorary Commander de l'Ordre National du Mérite from the French government. A number of awards were also obtained from the governments of the Kingdom of the Netherlands, Sweden, and Russia. And listener, that was today in history.
Kau ada melukis kata yang terindah dalam jiwaku kau berucap. Menyatakan rasa antara kita. Aku tahu hanyalah kita yang mengerti. Aku pun bisa menyadari mengapa cinta merasuki kita. Biarkan aku mencintaimu, walaupun aku bukan milikmu. Biarkanlah apa adanya kenyataan antara kita. Aku dan kamu saat ini tak bisa menyatu. Kenyataan yang kita hadapi, jangan pernah kita menyesalinya. Biarkan aku mencintaimu, walaupun aku bukan milikmu. Biarkanlah apa adanya kenyataan antara kita. Kita tak harus memiliki. Cintai aku dalam hatimu, aku akan mencintaimu dalam hatiku untuk selamanya. Aku bukan milikmu, biarkanlah apa adanya kenyataan antara kita. Kita tak harus memiliki. Cintai aku dalam aku akan mencintaimu dalam hatiku untuk selamanya. Oh.
Well, fellow listener, you've listened to the song and you are still with us on Voice of Indonesia from Indonesia to the world at frequency shortwave 3325 kHz and website www.vianews.id. In today's edition, I'd like to give you another segment, My Indonesia.
Voice of Indonesia.
Today's My Indonesia is titled Tons of Trillions Rupiah Prepare for Labor Intention. The Indonesian Ministry of Finance has prepared a budget of 18.55 trillion rupiahs for a labor-intensive program organized by four ministries within the framework of the National Economic Recovery Program. Director General of the Treasury of the Ministry of Finance, Andin Handianto, Sunday, June 14th, explained that the four ministries that received budget allocations for cash-intensive programs are the Ministry of Public Works and Public Housing, the Ministry of Transportation, the Ministry of Maritime Affairs and Fisheries, and the Ministry of Agriculture. The Ministry of Agriculture's labor-intensive activities include agriculture, irrigation, water management, land optimization and conservation, labor-intensive pilot project, organic fertilizer processing unit, farmer school, and food crop protection. Furthermore, budget of the cash-intensive labor programs for transportation sector is used for various activities, namely construction work and submitted to the contractor in order to be done labor-intensively. While for the realization of the budget for cash-intensive programs for the marine and fisheries sector is used for activities in the form of management and pond irrigation, mangrove planting, and integration of saline land. Andin Hadianto added the government had previously distributed funds for cash-intensive labor programs to the public works and public housing sectors for various community-based activities. For example, the operation and maintenance of irrigation, routine maintenance of roads and bridges, and waste treatment plant or TPS of reduce, reuse, recycle. This labor-intensive program was organized by the government to provide temporary income for daily workers who lost their income due to the large-scale social policy or PSBB in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic. The program also aims to maintain people's purchasing power and open up employment opportunities for rural communities. The main priority of this labor-intensive program is certainly poor families. And listener, that was My Indonesia.
Tak didengar.
You are still with us, Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world at frequency shortwave 3325 kHz and website www.vianews.id. Listener, then we would like to present next segment, Indonesia Wonder, about tourism and local wisdom of Indonesian people.
Listener, welcome back to Indonesian Wonder. For today's edition, I would like to introduce you Bagar Asam Culinary. Listener, coastal region of Bengkulu is rich of various marine cuisine. You must taste Bagar Asam, a kind of seafood, if you visit Bengkulu. This food is one traditional food of people in Bengkulu. The Bengkulu people, who has livelihood as fishermen, are familiarly to cooking Bagar Asam. Basically, all sea fish can be cooked Bagar Asam. However, the most suitable is rock snapper fish because texture of the fish is soft, so it can make Bagar Asam seasoning more delicable. To make asam bagar, the snapper is cooked with various spices, such as tamarind water and lime water, onion, garlic, galangal, ginger, chili, and turmeric. Asam bagar has sour, sweet, and spicy taste. This sour taste comes from tamarind, while the sweet taste comes from fresh snapper meat and the spicy just from a little bit chili and mixed ingredients. The mixture of sour, sweet, and spicy flavors what makes many people, including tourists, like the culinary. The special taste of the bagar asam is on the freshness of the fish and its seasoning. Listener, bagar asam is usually served hot with addition dishes of jengkol or boiled petai and melinjo crackers. The culinary is more delicable if eaten with palm sugar coconut ice as the drink. To enjoy this culinary, you can visit restaurants in the coastal areas of Bengkulu, such as the Tapak Padri and Baai Island Port. The price is relatively affordable, about 10,000 rupiah to 30,000 rupiah per portion. Well, listener, that was Indonesian Wonder for today's edition, entitled Bagar Asam Culinary. We'll meet again in another interesting topic tomorrow.
Suatu hari tanpa sengaja kita bertemu. Aku yang pernah terluka kembali mengenal cinta. Hati ini kembali temukan senyum yang hilang. Semua itu karena dia. Tuhan, ku cinta dia, ku sayang dia, rindu dia, inginkan dia. Utuhkanlah rasa cinta di hatiku, hanya padanya, untuk dia. Do 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 do. Jauh waktu berjalan kita lalui bersama. Betapa di setiap hari ku jatuh cinta padanya. Dicintai oleh dia ku merasa sempurna. Semua itu karena dia. Oh Tuhan, ku cinta dia, ku sayang dia, rindu dia, inginkan dia. Utuhkanlah rasa cinta di hatiku hanya padanya, untuk dia. Sayang dia, rindu dia, inginkan dia. Utuhkanlah rasa cinta di hatiku hanya padanya, untuk dia hanya padanya. Untuk dia.
You've just listened to the third pop song, and for next segment we'll present to you Miss Eleni. So stay tuned for a listener on Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world.
Listeners, Voice of Indonesia, welcome back to Miss Eleni. Today, we inform you about creating massive ITI students have visors detect fish locations. So stay tuned with us at www.voinews.id. Many problems faced by Indonesian fishermen whose 3 students of the 10 November Institute of Technology to create the latest technology. Through this technology called Massive, they present a fish finder with the ability to show condition in waters in real time. 3 of them are Muhammad Azim, Dista Rizky Dwiyanti, and Alfi Rahmawati. Through this innovation, they are trying to help optimize the catch of fish of sea while still prioritizing the safety of every fisherman when fishing. Muhammad Azim, as the team leader, revealed the making of Massive was motivated by the problem of fishermen who never finish fishing in the Indonesian waters. According to the fishermen, the catch of the fish is uncertain, difficult to predict. The fishing tool is not like other expensive fish detection devices. The tool can be used by small fishermen because the price is affordable. So, the consumption of the local fish market can increase. He said, most of the current fish finders are still used limited to large ships and they are foreign made. However, this tool is present as an alternative group of fishing communities. Although being alternative, the function of the fishing tool can be equally used to search for fish in deep sea. This tool has 2 parts, namely one place on the sieve and one place at sea. LiDAR is to detect the location of fish based on the speed of water and wind currents. So, the sensor data sent to fishermen will be relevant to the underwater situation. This tool is also equipped with several components such as anemometer to detect wind speed, sonar to detect the presence of fish, and radio frequency module as a media for transferring data from sensor to monitors. Muhammad Azim also stated that currently the tool is being tried and studied again because it still needs improvement and evaluation in terms of packaging. That was Miss Lenny for today. Thanks for listening.
Segala cara telah kita coba demi keutuhan cinta yang sejak semula kita percaya. Bulan di langit pun mengerti saat bicara tak lagi jadi cara yang bisa hentikan pertikaian hingga akhirnya rasa hilang dan
You are still with us, Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world at frequency shortwave 3325 kHz and website www.vianews.id. Listener, next segment would like to give you information about music. For today's edition, we'll present traditional music, so stay tuned, Voice Listener.
Voice of Indonesia.
Listeners, in today's segment of Music Corner, we are going to present a song from Jambi entitled Batik Jambi, to be sung by Sol Nomar and Nirmala. Jambi is a province which is located in Sumatra Island. One of the Jambi's well-known products is batik, whose natural colors are quite amazing. Batik Jambi was introduced by Javanese people at a hamlet in Seberang region, Jambi City, in the 17th century. Red color is one of the main characteristics of Jambi's batik. The special batik clothes from Jambi have inspired a musician, Yahya Abi, to create a song entitled Batik Jambi. The song tells about husband and wife who are fighting because they are puzzled about what clothes to wear in a bid to attend a wedding in Jambi's tradition. Finally, they decided to wear famous clothes from Seberang region of Jambi City, namely Batik Jambi. The song also announces to the public that Jambi has also distinctive batik. In the song, it is also introduced Seberang as the center of Jambi's batik producers. Here is Sof Nomar and Nirmala with the song entitled Batik Jambi.
Terima kasih.
Voice of Indonesia. Voice of Indonesia.
Yakinkan ku sanggup tanpamu, kan ku terima kenyataannya agar kau dapat menggapai kebahagiaanmu. Aku tak melupakanmu, hanya ingin melangkah maju tanpa mengingat dirimu. Aku tak melupakanmu, aku hanya berpura-pura melupakan dirimu. Aku tak melupakanmu, hanya kan menata hatiku, pulihkan diriku. Ku kan tunjukkan padamu agar kau tak pernah menyesal mengenal diriku. selalu ada yang terindah mengingatkanku. Aku tak melupakanmu, hanya ingin melangkah maju tanpa mengingat dirimu. Aku tak melupakanmu, aku hanya berpura-pura melupakan dirimu.
Now we end our togetherness in English language program broadcasting. Thank you for your attention, and after this English language program broadcasting, we will give another interesting information. So stay tuned with us at Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world, at frequency shortwave 3325 kHz and website www.vianews.id. Listener, do not forget to like and comment at Facebook The Voice of Indonesia, and Instagram account at voice.of.indonesia, or our Twitter account at voiindonesia. And you can also give your criticism and suggestion to our email address voi@vianews.id.